Blog Talk Radio.
Every time I drift down toward the past, and the giant never cares, won't be goodbye.
To welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight to Independent Music Showcase. This is our June the 19th, 2019 show. I'm your host, John Darlington. Our special guest tonight is Richard X. Heyman. Richard, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
And it's great to have you on. I was talking to Richard before the show, and he got to meet my friend Cat Stevens, our dog, who kind of gets... my dogs have been in most of my shows. I've been doing this since, well, about 11 years, Richard, and the dogs are in almost all the shows. So they're one of my trademarks. But we were talking about how that a long time ago, you were on this show with the rest of the Doughboys, and If people don't know about Richard X. Heyman, I want my listening audience and the people that have supported this show and independent musicians for the past 11 years. Richard is an incredible artist. The new album is awesome. Your solo work is great. You work with the Doughboys. It's just well worth it to listen to it and to support Richard's music. Now,
thank you.
I was trying. Yeah, it's just awesome. I can't get enough of it. I'm lucky enough, Richard, to get a lot of music coming through, and people send me.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's some I like more than others. I'll have to say that I love it all because it's like art. You know, it's just it has to be appreciated for what it is. But there are some that I just think is amazing and. I'm really think you did a great job on this latest release. The name of it is Pop Circles, and Richard's website is richardxheyman.com. Now, is that the place, Richard, that people can go to purchase that and purchase the other albums that you have?
Yes, it is.
It's pretty cool that they can go there.
Plus the other usual suspects on the internet, Amazon and CD Baby, but they can go to the richardxheyman.com website and purchase all my albums there.
And that's always good. I like that when people can just go to the website and they can learn about you and what you're doing, what's going on, what's new, up to date on
mm-hmm.
Richard X. Heyman. So let's talk. What I wanted to start off with was kind of your backstory and your history, but I want to talk a little bit before we get into that about this the latest release, and especially the song that we just heard, You Had to Be There. I guess You Had to Be There. That's just
mm-hmm.
I think you and I, and I might be out on a limb here a little bit, but I think we're close in age, and I really relate to that, and I get it. And in the extended version, you have a lot of really great quotes that kind of go in with the 60s and the 70s and things that were happening. Walk us through this, Richard, where this concept came from, where you thought this is where you wanted to go with this album.
I guess the album started on a whole other note. I was originally trying to find a kind of middle ground between the more garage rock that the Doughboys do and the more melodic pop that I normally do. I was trying to get somewhere between the two, so I'd have kind of a Stones, Animals kind of groove on one side, but sort of the Beatles and the Birds on the other, and try to tie that all together. That was the original concept. Then I decided to actually record some of the songs I had written for the Doughboys that they had released on earlier albums. So I laid down about a dozen of those drum tracks to do that, and I completed five of those. And then I decided at a certain point that I'd keep that separate from the album. And they're on the same disc at the end, but it's a EP tacked onto the end of the 12-song Pop Circles.
Yeah.
So that's the original concept. It changed along the way, which happens a lot when I'm in the middle of working on an album. I start writing more when I'm in the process of recording, and I write new things and they replace others, and I keep going back and doing drum tracks until I have all the things I need. And with this album, I just wrote most of the songs that are in the original first 12 songs there after the fact that I had started with this kind of concept of trying to do this middle ground between the Stones and the Beatles, let's say. You know, that was my goal.
Wow, that's quite a middle ground. And it's quite a goal to achieve. But I would have to say, you know, some of the influences I can hear, the harmonies, the chord changes, the complex chord changes, the ones that, you know, I just love to hear that kind of take you by surprise a little bit.
Mm.
And yeah. And so do you think it's, Richard, when you start like the studio process and you start and you enter in, I don't know how it works with you, but when you enter into this creative place where you're going to create this album, that everything just kind of kicks in, or does it happen randomly? How does that work where you know that, you know, you're going to be in this state of creation of songwriting? And can it be just, can you be anywhere, or is it just kind of like Richard has to kind of go by himself so you can kind of concentrate on it? How does that creative process work?
Well, as far as the songwriting, that happens several different ways. Sometimes it just pops into your head. It could be anywhere, just walking down the street, and a melody pops into your head and maybe a few lyrical ideas. But you don't know for sure what the chords are going to be behind that melody until you get home, and then you pick up a guitar, you sit down at the keyboard, and you start to figure out what chords you were kind of envisioning in that melody. And then the rest is just kind of like labor, intense, trying to finish it up lyrically and get the arrangement. Other times it starts with an instrument, piano or guitar, and I love chords and chord changes, so I'm always fooling around with trying to come up with sequences that haven't been used before.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, it gets mathematically more and more challenging, but that's one of the things that I attempt to do, is just find chord progressions that I haven't heard before that still make sense and have some emotional response. And that's one of my goals, is to try to, you know, add something new to pop music, because you know, there's just a lot of easy ways to just retread what's been done. And you know, I definitely wear my influences on my sleeve, but I still look at music as kind of an emotional outlet. So it's not so much about trying to emulate my influences. It's more about, how does it make me feel? Happy, sad, melancholy, bittersweet. That's really what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things, it's kind of addicting to me, is looking for that incredible chord change, looking for that place or that part that hasn't been done before. Because with music, Richard, I know you know this, and I know the listeners know this, and I think it's one of the coolest things, is music is like this eternal ocean that you can't explore the end of it. There is no end of it. And it's this creative power. So you can, I mean, okay, so the Beatles pretty much nailed down things pretty good.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, but they didn't close the door on it. You know, I interviewed Klaatu. I interviewed the three guys in Klaatu, and they were talking about that. Yeah, and they were talking about the Renaissance, that they believed that this window of creativity opened, shone down on the earth, and then closed up. And I think that did happen, but I also think that there's incredible things going on right now. I think musicians like yourself that are searching for those chords and searching for those, you know, something that hasn't been done before. And it's out there. That's the coolest thing to me about music, is it's out there. And it's not, you know, like you can say, well, I can't be Babe Ruth. I can't be, you know, Michael Jordan. It's already been done. But and I also, you know, understand that Lennon and McCartney did a pretty good job in what they did, which will be very hard for people to get to that level. But I do think it's available. I think it can be accomplished. So does that kind of drive you, Richard, when you're writing songs, to know that with your talent and with your drive and with your musical ability? I mean, from what I've read, you play just about every instrument. Is that correct?
Well, the basic rock and roll instruments. I play the keyboards and guitar, bass, and drums, some harmonica, lots of different percussion. But I'm still mainly a drummer. That's my main instrument.
So when you... Yeah, and that's pretty awesome too. Because...
But you know, going back to your question, it is definitely the thing that drives me, is to try to get that song that just really brings out a strong feeling emotionally. I just love that. I just keep trying to find that. And I feel like I never quite get there, but that's what keeps me going. So I want to try again, and I want to see if I can just nail one song that really does it for me. And then I know if it moves me a certain way, that's going to move other people. And
yeah, that's really cool.
Part of the process is just it's that feeling that one day I'm going to come up with that song that does it, and I keep trying, and the ones that I have so far are just, you know, each one's an attempt to do that, but I never feel like I've gotten it.
It's like you're on a journey, you know. Coolest thing. Yeah, it's. I think that's cool because I've talked to people that a lot of people that have had number one hits and have had successes in music, and they've got, some of them have just put their guitars up and their pianos up, Richard, and said that's probably as good as I'm going to do, and that's it. Then I talk to some that think, you know, they haven't even scratched it, that there's so much to do. And earlier you said something about you had to, when you were working on the album, it did take work and you really had to go after it and get busy. How much of that is like when you're writing a song and you said it can just pop in your head, or do you have to, maybe you did this both ways on this album, but like compose it where you have to sit down. I've talked to songwriters that I'm sure you have too, that work for a living writing songs, and they have to go in and they have to create music. It's not like they're, you know, inspired or a muse or anything. They have to actually just work it, like, you know, get their tools out.
Right.
Does that make any sense? Do you do both of those, or which one is?
More or less. I have a lot of songs that my wife, Nancy, who handles the business and gets, you know, works on placements and TV shows and movies and things like that. But those are just songs that I already had that weren't written specifically for that purpose, but they find their way there. But I find, for me, the music end of it comes a little easier. It's just a natural thing for me to sit down at a piano and start playing some chords and feeling what the next chord's going to be that's going to work for me. The hard part is finishing it. You know, because you have the initial idea. And then, so usually the music comes first, and I get that done fairly quickly. And then I have to sit down and think, okay, you know, what's this song trying to say lyrically? And there's all these restrictions, you know, when you're writing lyrics. There's a scheme, there's a rhyme scheme and a meter scheme. And I have this self-imposed rule that when I come up with a certain rhythmic melody, that I try to just stick with it. So I have to fit the lyrics like a puzzle to that, and that's where the work comes in.
Yeah.
Very infrequently will I change that. I usually try to just keep. I just figure that's the way, you know, I heard the music, so I'm going to be true to that, and then mold the lyrics to that. That's just the way I work. You know, some
now
people write lyrics first, or but usually the music flows, and then along with a few lyrical lines, hopefully, which will spur the rest of the idea of the story.
Now you said, Richard, that sometimes it's hard to finish it. Are you, how is Richard as a critic to your music? Is it something that you have to, I've talked to other people that will go into the studio and people around them have to say, we have to stop, we have to go on, because they just continue with the song because they're never at a place where they're pleased with it. Is that ever a part of your process?
Yeah, well, they say that art is never finished. It's only abandoned. So that's kind of what it's like. You know, I have to have a realistic time, you know, to stop. You know, it's very difficult sometimes. You just get carried away with this kind of pseudo-perfection that doesn't really exist, that you're never going to achieve. But, you know, I work in collaboration with my wife, Nancy, who's engineering, and she's also critiquing as I go along. And,
okay.
You know, she has a whole different sort of criteria than I do. See, without her, my records would be much rougher and probably a little less kind of rounded off. She really wants things in time and in tune, and so she drives me hard to make sure that that end of it is up to her specifications. So, you know, we each have our own little quirks as far as, you know, what you would call, you know, perfectionist nature.
Yeah. Is Nancy the person you'd go to when you have an idea for a song or you have a thought and you want to sit down and play it for the very first time? Is she the one you share it with?
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. Just logistically, she's here and I want to get her opinion, but she's a tough critic. She doesn't love everything, and she really only likes what she likes, and she's not a yes person, which is good, kind of brings me down to earth. There's times where I just have to fight her on the inclusion of certain songs, and then at a certain point I hopefully convince her that it was the right decision to do the song. But we both have this method that we stumble upon early on, which is we call the listenability factor, and it starts right after the song is written. You know, you could be working on what you think is your masterpiece, and then you listen back and you realize it's just a piece of dribble.
Mm-hmm.
And then there might be some little throwaway thing you listen back to and you say, ah, that's the one. You know, music.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, music's very cathartic to play and to jam on, and that end of it. And, you know, I know that firsthand as a musician, but it's mainly for, you know, about listening. And so we're very stringent about how does the song actually sound, listening back to it. You know,
yeah,
we'll
that's a good point.
Recording of it just to see what's really there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so a lot of things I write never even make it to the stage where I do a drum track for it.
Mm.
But they all eventually, or the ones that we pick to be included on the recordings, start with the drums always.
Now, are you, like when you are, what are you personally, what's Richard X. Heyman listening to right now? If you're going to sit down and listen to some music, what are you listening to right now?
Well, every night when we have dinner, we have a little kind of pseudo-fake jukebox, really a CD player, on our kitchen table. It's like a little miniature jukebox, and you know, you put a CD in there. So each night, like tonight, we just listened to Ella Fitzgerald singing Johnny Mercer songs. I mean, we're very eclectic. I mean, we listen to a lot of Frank Sinatra and a lot of jazz and different things. We've lately got heavily into classical music. We go to Lincoln Center a lot, listen to the New York Philharmonic. We both became huge Beethoven fanatics. As far as pop music, I still go back to the stuff I grew up with. It still holds up, of course. I love the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and the Kinks and Dylan and on, you know,
yep.
Birds. If somebody wants to turn me on to something newer, I'll listen with open ears. But like you said earlier, it's hard to compete with the golden age of 60s rock and roll. There's just something magical about it that I haven't really heard anyone, myself included, come close to. It's just something about that. You know, it's like the whole baby boom generation, which I'm a part of, hasn't, in my opinion, this is strictly my opinion, and people may argue and say, oh, what about this guy? You know, but I don't think there's been anybody from the baby boomer generation that can compete with what I call the war generation, which is the generation of the Beatles and the Stones and Dylan and people that were born in the early 40s that became our heroes growing up.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that too. And does that have any, when we started the show off, Richard, we played Guess You Had to Be There. Is that, when you wrote that, was that what you just were talking about in your mind and kind of how you were feeling?
Well, the musical end of it, certainly. The song kind of was about the whole experience of growing up in that era. Just, you know, socially and musically and politically and emotionally. So I tried to just cover that feeling of what it was like.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a very good way to put it. That feeling of what it was like, because I will talk to people that will, say, oh, you're old and you're not up to date with this music and stuff. And I say, man, I wouldn't trade anything for what I grew up with. I mean, there were so many things going on musically that it was just incredible. And
I guess it
just excited us. I think that's what it was. It provoked things. It made you think. It made you question things. It made you think, okay, I don't know about you. I think we might have the same idea on this, but it was a whole thing where you thought, what, you know, are my parents doing? And is that the right way to go? And music actually was the way that people got to thinking that. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Well, to a point, I mean, that whole counterculture thing just was blossoming. It was really the first time that the teenager was even sort of addressed, because before that it seemed like, just judging from the way, you know, the media and movies portrayed people back before our generation, you were a kid and suddenly you were an adult, and the whole teenage experience didn't seem to exist.
Yeah.
And it seemed like in the late 50s, mid-50s into the 60s, all of a sudden there was the teenager. And they had their own music, and it just became, at a certain point, an art form, which was unexpected. You know, I mean, you could even go back to as early as Chuck Berry and say you were already, you know, pure art on what he was doing. And then the Beatles took it even further, and, you know, with Dylan and his whole approach to lyrics and social commentary. And then you had Ray Davies with the Kinks, what he was writing about English society. By 67, it was this incredible, beautiful art. And then it kind of started to fade after that, in my opinion. You know, with several exceptions, but it was building up to just this great art form. I mean, you had stuff like Procol Harum coming out with this Baroque rock. I remember seeing Procol Harum at the Fillmore, and it brought me to tears. It was so impactful, the beauty of the music, and it was just so powerful.
And that's what I think happened to me too. It was like there was all this stuff going on in life, and then there was this thing that just stopped everything, and it was music. It stopped everything, and you had to pay attention to it. And you were talking about your early concerts. I think when I'm from the Columbus, Ohio area, and one of the first, this is the craziest combination of groups. But this had to be like right around 67, 68. The association opened up for Canned Heat.
Wow. that's an eclectic bill.
And it actually, both of them are really good. I was, you know, there to see Canned Heat, and but the association were awesome. They were just so tight and so good in their harmonies. And but I thought, who you know, scheduled that? But
yeah, well, it's almost like the way things were on an AM radio. You have Motown and R&B mixed in with British Invasion and American folk rock and, you know, stuff from Memphis and
yeah,
West Coast surf music with the Beach Boys and all the people.
Yeah, and a Jerry,
the whole, you know.
Yeah, throw on a Jerry Reed song or something.
Yeah, I know. And then you'd have, you know, Louis Armstrong mixed in there. Or Fred
yeah.
Sinatra.
It was
really getting this lesson in all kinds of styles at once, all on the same station. Now, that certainly doesn't exist anymore.
No, hardly any of the stations exist anymore. It's like finding a music station is, well, around here it's impossible. There's like a classic rock station that plays Elton John, the Eagles, and Bad Company, and that's
right.
About it.
I know that we have that in New York. The classic rock station has kind of made me have a certain disdain for the music I once loved, which is really sad. But it's
yeah,
because of the limited playlist and, you know, the oversaturation. I mean, you can only hear Layla so many times.
Yeah, and that's a shame, but it is true. Now, what I'd like to do, Richard, is play another song from the album.
Okay.
My guest is Richard X. Heyman. You can go on his website, richardxheyman.com. His latest release is Pop Circles. I highly recommend it. You can get it in all the download, Amazon and iTunes and all of those places. And you can go to Richard's website and purchase the music right there. I want to play the song Upside and Down. Would you like to talk about that before we play it?
Yeah, we were just talking about Motown being on the radio alongside the British Invasion stuff. And I wanted to take a crack at kind of a version of what Motown meant to me, and obviously it's going to come out sounding nothing like Motown by the time I got done with it, and that's what happened with that song. I started trying to get a Motown feel, and then I started my production ideas, and it ended up having traces of that, but it's also kind of a pop song as well. So, and it's a love song. It's just about, you know, endurance with the one you love and kind of being resilient.
It sounds good. Let's play it. This is Richard X. Heyman, Upside and Down, from his latest release, Pop Circles. And we'll be right back with the rest of the interview with Richard right after this.
Sure.
like to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase tonight. I'm your host, John Darlington, and my special guest is Richard X. Heyman. We're talking about and listening to songs from his latest release, Pop Circles. You can go on Richard's website, richardheyman.com, richardxheyman.com, and you can get the music right there, purchase it right from the website, and read all about what's going on with Richard X. Heyman. And that's a really awesome song. I think that's I love that. It had me dancing around here a little bit in the studio.
That's good.
That's always good. Let's go back. What I do sometimes, Richard, is start the show like this, but I think this is the right place to do it. Walk us through the genesis, the beginning, where you grew up, and how music became a part of you, that you wanted to be a musician. Were you in a musical family? What were some of your influences? Just kind of walk us through your life, you know, when you were growing up, and how music was a big part in your life.
Okay, well, I'm from Plainfield, New Jersey, and that's right in the middle of the state, central Jersey. And when I was about 5 years old, I just started to bug my parents that I wanted to get a drum set. I must have seen it on TV or something. I don't know. I don't really remember what the genesis was, but I knew I had to play the drums, and I just pestered them. And at first, they got me a little toy, you know, one of those little xylophones, and then they got me a bongo drum. They built me up slowly. They got me a snare drum, and eventually, they got me a set of timbales for some reason. And I started playing. You know, I had my snare drum and my bongos and congas. And when I was 7, they got me a full kit, a Kent drum set. And I was off and running. I just sat down and knew how to play. And I don't know where that came from. Nobody was particularly musical. My father played a little trumpet. But I just had this kind of knowledge about how you're supposed to, you know, create a drum beat with your four limbs. And I could barely reach the floor with my little short legs. I got into that, and then I would listen a lot to Gene Krupa with the Benny Goodman Band. That was a big influence. And then I got into the Ventures, which were a popular instrumental group.
Right.
And that was kind of the early days of rock, and listened to a lot of AM radio. So I was absorbing all the hits of the day. And then when I was in my adolescence, the Beatles hit. And it was game over. Like, I just was totally under the spell of Ringo Starr's drumming, and then Charlie Watts, and then subsequently I realized that half the records I was listening to were Hal Blaine on drums, and all the American hits and the Phil Spector wall of sound, and on, there's so many things to absorb. And then at the same time, I was listening to a lot of Broadway show music, and some classical, and a lot of big band jazz. So it all was this big amalgam of styles and genres. So that was my beginnings. And then I realized I used to hear that the piano was a percussion instrument. So I thought, huh, I'm a drummer percussionist. I should check out the piano. So when I was around, about 12 or so, I started banging around on any piano. We didn't have one in the house at the time, but I just would go to friends, and at school, if I saw a piano, I would just sit down and start banging around until I could figure out chords. And then in my teen years, I got into the guitar, which was the most difficult for me because my hands as a drummer were used to just clutching a drumstick, and all of a sudden I had to find all this independence between each finger, and that was a challenge at first, but suddenly after a few months of trying to figure it all out, I got, you know, the basic chords down, and then over the years just taught myself more and more rock and roll style guitar playing.
Now, I've got a question.
Yeah, go on.
About drumming. I met Pete Best once, and I've listened to him live. And what did you think of his drumming? And you said that how Ringo, and I'm just a big Ringo fan. I just love Ringo's drumming. I just think it's incredible. And what do you think was the big difference between Pete Best's drumming and Ringo's drumming? Is that just kind of a novice question from a non-drummer? Because I can listen to Pete, and he doesn't sound bad to me, but I wasn't quite sure what they were looking for that they found with Ringo.
Right. Well, there's a limited palette of Pete Best recording, so it's unfair in a way to totally judge him, because I think the few recorded things I've heard with him were so primitive and early that, you know, mixed in with the nerves that you have when you're being recorded and you know the red light is on.
Yeah.
And sometimes drums are recorded in a way that wasn't the way that you wanted them to sound, because they're mic'd up by the engineer at the studio, so the way they ended up sounding on the recording might not be really an indication of what you intended. So it's really kind of difficult with the little bit of recordings with him. There's certainly a few examples where he sounds fine to me, too. I've heard him live, and I went to see him when he was playing in New York, and I thought he was, you know, sounding fine live. He was laying down a good beat, and it seemed like his tempo was okay. But, you know, along with, you know, most Beatlemaniacs, I know the whole story of how George Martin said, you know, don't care what you do with this guy, but I'm bringing in a professional drummer when they can, you know, didn't care whether he stayed or not, but then by that time Ringo had replaced him. So I don't really have a definitive answer about, you know, that. All I know is Ringo was fabulous. You know, what a, you know, a kind of groove he had. That's the main thing. I mean, well, there's so many things I like about Ringo's drumming. I mean, he just sounded good on the recordings. I mean, the groove is there. Some unique fills. You know, his choice of where to open things up and his dynamics. You know, but on the same token, I love Keith Moon, who's the total opposite.
Oh yeah,
you know, he's just
yeah.
You know, and
that,
then
that,
you know, I think even
point.
Above all that, I love Mitch Mitchell with Jimi Hendrix. I think he's perhaps my biggest influence when I think about the way I play now.
Oh, that's interesting.
And B.J. Wilson with Procol Harum is another one. And then Hal Blaine, of course. All those guys.
Now, Mitch Mitchell, he was with The Experience, but didn't Buddy Miles take – didn't Jimmy go to – was it the Band of Gypsies? And was Buddy Miles his drummer? What do you think of Buddy Miles' drumming?
Well, he was more of a backbeat groove player. You know, Mitch Mitchell had almost like an Elvin Jones jazz feel to his playing, mixed with this very English sensibility. And I thought, in my humble opinion, he was like the perfect drummer for those Hendrix albums. I think he is just as important as the guitar on those albums. He's doing, you know, any drummer who grew up in that era, you know, knows that Mitch Mitchell was just killing it on those albums. He's just doing stuff that no one else would have thought to do, and he executes them beautifully, and the sound is there. And so I loved him.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love picking brains of drummers and people that you would know more than I would know. I mean, because you could hear things I couldn't hear. So to me, it's just really cool to get that your opinion on that, Richard. Mick Fleetwood, what do you think of him?
Good groove drummer. Again, you know, he's like just a backbeat guy that, you know, has a certain groove. Everybody, you know, hits the two and four in a different place within that one little beat. Some, you know, Ringo's way at the back of it, you know, and Keith Moon is a little more in the front of it, Bobby Elliott's toward the front of it, Bobby Elliott with the Hollies.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah, he's great. And then, you know, Hal Blaine with his groove. It's just interesting where they hit that two and four within the context of a groove. Gives them their little signature sound.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. When you hear a song, or what's the first thing do you hear? Is it the drums? The first thing that pops out to you?
I let it wash over me. Like I said, to me, the thing that I love and always loved about music is the way it makes me feel. And I wear my heart on my sleeve. If the music makes me sad or bittersweet or melancholy, I just really let it go, and, you know, it could bring me to tears sometimes.
Mm.
But I think my favorite quality is when it's happy and sad at the same time, which a lot of Beatles music does for me.
Yeah, that's a great point. I never really thought of that.
Yeah, like a song like I'll Be Back by the Beatles. Very melancholy. The lyrics are sad. It's kind of bittersweet, but at the end of the day, it makes me really happy for some reason when I listen to it.
That's cool. Well, let's play another song, Richard. I want to play Marlena.
Okay.
Would you like to talk about that?
Okay. Yeah, well, that's kind of like, it's a breakup song, and I've had all kinds of ups and downs romantically throughout my life, and so I just kind of harken back to that feeling of being dumped. And along with that, I kind of made it a travelogue of New Jersey. I mentioned a lot of towns, several towns from Jersey being mentioned in that song, along with different highways, and it's all in the kind of mixed in the background vocals, so they're hard to decipher, but it's all in there, and it's just driving up and down across New Jersey after a breakup.
Well, this is Marlena from that's cool. Richard X. Heyman from his latest Pop Circles. We'll be right back with the rest of the interview with Richard right after this.
Oh,
And you're back on John Talk Radio. This is our June the 19th, 2019 show. My special guest is Richard X. Heyman. You can go on richardxheyman.com. His latest release is Pop Circles. We just heard Marlena. I think that's a song. That just really is a cool song, Richard. I think that's the breakout hit for that for your album.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's just cool. It's got a lot of things going on, and I just really like it. It just like takes me somewhere, and I think it's a great song. So
I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. And so just really enjoy it. I mean, I really do enjoy your album a lot. But we don't have a lot of time left. Is there any projects or anything that you would like to promote? Sometimes I forget to ask artists that. Is there anything going on that you would like to talk about?
Well, the Doughboys have a new album that's going to be released very shortly. And it's an album called Running for Covers, and it's all our interpretation of songs that we grew up with, cover songs. And we just wanted to get it off our chest, so we did a few garage classics and then a couple of real unexpected things that are out of left field. So that's coming out shortly. It's called Running for Covers, the Doughboys. And the main thing, you know, my mind is set on is just promoting Pop Circles right now. Even though I'm already kind of working on stuff for the next album, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a lot of songs that we didn't include on this that we could possibly use for the next album as well. So I may just get back to work on those. But
okay.
My main focus is on Pop Circles.
Is it a difficult process, Richard, to select the songs for this album when you might have 40 or 50 songs and to whittle it down? Is that a difficult process for you?
It is, because I just don't know. I'm too close to it, obviously. And I rely on Nancy a lot because she's more objective. And so we whittle it down, and, you know, there's the danger of oversaturation. So, you know, I originally was going to do this album with the Doughboy songs that I had written interspersed within the album. And then when I decided not to include them, I just couldn't let it go. So that's why they're tacked on at the end. So I got a little self-indulgent there, but it's really a separate EP. You know, it could have been on a different piece of plastic, but we just figured for logistics sake and cost sake, it was better just give people the bonus EP right up there on the end there. So Pop Circles is a 12-song album, and I recommend people, you know, really just listen to that as a 12-song album, and then the 13th through 17th song get into a whole other mindset, and that's the Doughboy songs.
Well, it's been really great talking to you, Richard. I really appreciate your time, and I love your music, and we'll have to do this again.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate all your musical insights. You know, it's nice to talk to somebody that really gets it and is into the real nitty-gritty of why we're all doing this.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's like I'm totally absorbed and with it, and I have to like just step away sometimes. But I really enjoy it when I get to hear music like yours, and it's awesome. So we're gonna go out with I just want to thank the listeners that have supported this show for a long time, and I really appreciate that. We're gonna go out with one of the songs that were one of the Doughboy garage songs, Route 22. So thanks a lot, Richard.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We'll talk to you later. And thanks, everyone. Everybody, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, John.
Sometimes when my guard is down and I find myself in my old town, I always think of you on Route 22. We take it up to Route 19. could you?